All right, folks, we're back for two podcasts this week. The Without Limits podcast here. We have Colin Hackman, meteorologist here in Wilmington, North Carolina, for NBC and Fox, WCT. And he is running the Boston Marathon this year. This will be his seventh Boston Marathon. And we have Philip Davis, who is 63 years old. He's run the Boston Marathon six times. He's not doing it this year, but his wife is. And we figured we'd get some insight from Philip. He has PR'd in Boston with a 328. Am I right, Philip? 328? 326?
327.10.
So right in the middle of what I thought. And then, of course, I'm Ace, and we have Hammer on here, who he doesn't know anything about Boston.
I've done it three or four times, and I can't remember. I can never remember stuff like that. I've done it for fun, and I did it for speed.
So we want to offer the folks heading up to Boston Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're listening. Maybe we have some first-timers at Boston. We want to offer our points of view from the top 60 half to the 327-ish. And then, hey, look, if you're doing it, you're go 4 to 6 hours somewhere in there. All of these little notes and helpful hints will help you execute your race the best possible way from a bunch of coaches and athletes here on this podcast. So we'll kick it off with Colin Hackman, meteorologist. Can you give us an accurate weather report for Monday morning?
It's going to be great. Talking about 25 to 30 knot tailwind and temperatures in the 50s. Oh, you said Monday morning. Oh, my bad. I thought you said Saturday. Darn. Yeah. Tailwind. So we've got that going for us. If you like humidity and you train in humid climates like most of us do, you're going to like the forecast. It's going to be a little sticky. Relative humidity is going to be high. We've got a high pressure setting up, but we'll be on the edge of the ridge, which means that we're going to have downsloping flow, which means that we're going to have sinking humid air, maybe a little bit warmer than what you would hope for a race start. 10 a.m. forecast, I think they're looking at probably upper 50s, low 60s. Not great, but not terrible. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The tailwind part of this, you know, is the weird part, because like almost always like, oh, I want to have a tailwind, need to have a tailwind. And then you get like just enough tailwind to negatively affect any cooling that you would get from a head, you know, like a 6 to 7 mile an hour headwind. If you're running that pace where you get some cooling, you know, from evaporation, instead of kind of being a vacuum with a west wind. But, you know, all things told, it's not a 40 mile an hour headwind and rain in 35 degrees. So I think people who run this race before or have heard of some of the worst weather, and we've had some really weird weather over the last decade. It's not bad. It's kind of an average Boston day.
So, you know, I have an interesting tidbit. You know, when one year when we put on the marathon here, we had a muggy, foggy morning. It was about the same temperatures as the Boston Marathon is going to be this year. And the half marathoners did not do well. All around the times were slower because it's a race that, you know, you're toying right around with the threshold effort, zone four heart rate, dipping into zone five. But on the contrary, the marathon it was one of our best top Boston qualifying years, and we had a lot of personal best. It was 55 and with a high of 65. It was a dreary, sort of foggy morning. You know, winds were variable. But sometimes I think those temperatures, while yes, on paper, they may be inhibitive a little bit, they also aren't horrible if you can keep your zones in check, especially in the first 13 miles. So Colin, how are you going to, what are you going to do? I know your A goal is under 245. He's 47 years old. He's done Boston seven times. So how are you going to do it? What are you going to do? Tell the crowd out there that's going to listen, all two of them. Oh, wait, there's four people.
Yeah, there's four of us here. So, I mean, you guys are the experts on pacing. I feel like I'm in the company of some real runners here. The I mean, how am I going to do it in regards to the weather, or how am I going to
Well,
do it?
yeah,
You know, like.
what's your race plan? You know, as do have done this 7 years, or this will be the 7th year. You know the forecast. You're in great shape and putting in 90 to 100 mile weeks, which is, you know, abnormal for most of the people who are listening, except for the top 10, which you're definitely not in. There
Top 10 47-year-olds from Wilmington, North Carolina.
you go. So give us a little synopsis of what you're going to do, and Hammersmith and I'll analyze. Well, I'll let Hammersmith analyze. I've already analyzed you.
Yeah, I mean, all of my best marathon performances come off of a almost standard deviation negative split, to where the first 5K doesn't make sense to the rest of the race, where I run well. So I know that you and I have discussed this before, but you're a proponent of that slower start. The proof's in the pudding for me. So that's a must. So if there's anything, I like how McGilvery breaks it down. You know, that first 3 miles is, you can't really run fast anyways. I'm considering moving back a few corrals just so that there's no pressure to try to be running any faster. My goal finish time, like if everything works out good, it'd be about 6:20 pace. I'd like to run that first mile and maybe even first 5K at 7 minutes, 6:45, 6:35, and then get into an upper 6:20s through the flats. Get to the hills feeling good. When I've run well at Boston, I get to Newton and or to the whatever it is, the Commonwealth Avenue Hill, the first hill there at the fire station, feeling like, okay, let's go. And somehow any of my like better performances there, I time warp through those hills where I come out, you know, at Newton going, that was it. You know, I can't believe that was it. I held 6:50s or 6:40s. So that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to make that turn and have the marathon magic, you know, roll through there and be able to get through the hills with my pace at 6:40-ish. And the hard part for me, as always, and it's not because of the hills necessarily, it's because it's a freaking marathon, is getting rolling again at mile 21. So I hope to have just enough left, or be close enough with the clock that my brain doesn't go, oh, well, you know, you didn't make it this year, buddy, but just be close enough to where I can send a surge there down to the reservoir and then get, you know, get downtown without, without losing too much. So if I can get through that downhill portion of the course back on pace at 6:20, I could run 6:45, and that'd be good for me this year, I think.
Be awesome. Hammer, what you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Colin's done enough marathons to know that, and as a coaching, tidbit, don't change, too much, going into the race. If this is his experience over the last few marathons that he's done and it's worked well for him, why are we trying to change everything last minute? I think kind of going into his first 3 miles of the race, there's this technical term, not to get too thick in the weeds, but cardiac drift occurs when your body temperature and heart rate just naturally elevate over the course of a longer race, like a half marathon to marathon. So starting off very even keeled and much slower than his goal pace is probably going to benefit him a lot, especially going into an easier section of that first 3 miles. Obviously, we all know it's fairly downhill. I would probably recommend staying in the corral that he's in. Just let him pass you. I do know when I did it a couple years ago, I didn't have a very fast qualifying time, but I was fitter than my corral, and I had to work really, really hard to get around. It was probably, I think I passed 3,000 people in the first 14 to 15 miles of the race just because I was in the third or fourth corral. So recommend staying in the corral that he's in, but love the plan, especially because it is going to be warmer. Just from personal experience, my fastest races were all under 40 degrees for the marathon at 50K distances. I don't like it to be hot, one, because the body mechanically, when we're running, we spend a lot of energy obviously trying to propel our body down the path, down the course, but a lot of it gets expended in body heat. We're trying to keep our body cool, and obviously all that movement is creating body heat. So anytime he can kind of keep his heart rate down and his body temperature down, especially early on in the marathon, is going to do well for him.
So Philip Davis on here, he's 63 years old. He's done 6 Boston marathons, and he's PR'd on the Boston Marathon course with a 3:327 on a in a warm year. So Philip, give us your angle. What did you do that year to get through the warmth?
Well, I like to write on my wrist, like, and I tell all the people that ask, but just a little thing is, you know, don't be stupid early and don't be a wimp late. So when I'm starting to want to walk or slow down, I'll look at that. And I think the big thing is surviving Newton Hills. Don't, you know, you and the mid pack people, there are hundreds of people walking. You just gotta like power through it. Get, you know, don't give in to the demons. Make deals with yourself and just kind of get through that. And then when you get to Boston College, you know, just know it's the last 10K, so it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be easier than what you were doing effort-wise.
So, Philip, when you got warm or felt the warmth, how was your hydration and nutrition? Philip's wife is a dietitian, so that doesn't hurt. But I know he drinks a lot of Diet Coke. So what did you kind of – how did you keep yourself cool – obviously, by not going out stupid, but how did you keep yourself cool in the later half of the race? You know, as we could predict this year that in the mid-60s, people are going to warm up. So what would you say to them?
Well, generally, I like the first couple of waters to go on my head. You know, if they're handing, like, sponges or anything or ice, grabbing that and then trying to drink a cup of water and a cup of whatever the sports drink is at the time. But I do remember, like, because I've done it relatively the same pace three times and they were all hot, that last aid station I was like really toasted and had to stop a second and like drink a couple cups of water because I was a little bit parched. I think if you haven't done salt, you know, there's definitely some benefits to taking some salt throughout, just kind of to help your body a little bit, but that also gonna make you drink a little more too.
Yeah, and to go along with what Philip said, the salts are important. And remember, Morton, which a lot of people take, does not have sodium. So don't rely on Morton for sodium. You know, it's one of those things. You gotta look at the gels. Not all gels are the same. Any other advice, Philip, for mid-packers? I like what you said about that there are lots of people walking, hundreds of people walking up the hills, and that you have to use that to your advantage if you are trying to have a good race there, as you're going to have a lot to navigate around. And I like Matt's advice, too, on not corralling back, because then you have to work hard to get through the crowd. And from what I've seen, some people will run 26.5 or 26.8 on this course because they're weaving around so many people. So
yeah, I was almost 27 the year I did it when I started three corrals back than my expected finish time. But that was the corral I was given because of my slow qualifying time.
And the course is measured in a straight line, shortest possible distance. So yeah. Philip, anything else?
I tend to just kind of a point on that because, you know, there is a statistic. You can look at your bib number and see where you finished. And I generally think, at least all of your athletes, we tend to finish 10,000 people ahead of where we qualify. So you're going to be weaving no matter kind of like how you start. So, you know, again, Newton Hill, I say just watch the top of Heartbreak Hill. I know that steeper downhill right after you crest Boston College generally hurt the thighs a little bit. But after that, it seemed like I could force myself into, you know, at that point, like being in the 745, 750 range and just kind of gutting it out through there. So
great advice. So I broke down three of my athletes that got PR'd at Boston. I got personal bests at Boston, and they're all very similar on how the breakdown was. I broke it down by their minutes. So their first 40 minutes were very conservative. So Bethany and Steven, they both PR'd, two of my athletes. I'll break down one because they're all similar, but One of the girls, she ran a 256. She PR'd. Her first 40 minutes were about 6:45 average pace, so a little bit slower than the overall time, you know. And then she dropped at about the 10K marker to an average of about 6:35 to 6:38. All right, so she dropped about 8 to 10 seconds a mile from about mile 6.2 until mile 15. Mile 16 was her fastest mile, which we know going right into the Newton Hills, that 1 mile is a big downhill. She dropped to 6:25, to 6:28, right in that range. And then going up the Newton Hills, she fell back to 6:45 to 6:50 and had the last mile of heartbreak being 7:05. Then she rebounded on the other side of heartbreak back to her starting pace of about 6:40 to 50. And that's pretty standard through the three athletes that I analyzed their data and I saw their cardiac drift. And so if you can think about the fluctuations in pace, if you're really going for a good time in Boston, you're gonna have pace fluctuations. Your first 10K to 8 miles should be a little slower. Your 8 miles to mile 16, it's gonna be a little faster. The hills, maybe 15 up to 20 second decrease in pace. That's very possible. And it's not unlikely. But then, as all three of these gentlemen have said, you got to rebound after heartbreak. And if you can finish the way you started, you probably executed Boston pretty good. Pretty good. So, any other thoughts, guys?
Yeah, I mean, all marathons, most marathons, it's a 20-mile long run and a 10K race, and that couldn't be more true about Boston. You're setting yourself up for the last 6 miles of Boston, and if you don't set yourself up well, it's going to be a rough 10K to the finish line.
Alan?
Agreed. I mean, it's just that course in any marathon. I haven't run very many other marathons, two maybe other marathons besides Boston, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's so funny you think about all of the tactics and the strategy, but kind of back to what Philip was talking about from the sit-go sign in, which is it's just like its own race, and the just staying connected and trying to, for me, overcome the worry and the doubt and the fear and the, holding down vomit and all the things that come late in a marathon. It's like the meta race. It's the race within the race. Just getting to that point, feeling good enough to roll the dice, is key. But then you have to, you got to dig deep. So, I agree that it's such a such a weird distance and event, that all of that work that goes in, not only in the, the season, but in the day, really just gets you ready for the last 8K. I mean,
Yeah.
it's bizarre, but that's what it is.
I've been to Boston 4 times. And before you tell you about my experience, I just want to give a shout out to our Runner's Daily Vitamin. If you are a Boston listener and you want to get on a daily vitamin formula, check it out at runners-essentials.com. See that little shout out here I like to give on these podcasts. Did I sound good?
That was great. That was fantastic.
I just ordered
But
some.
good. I mean, it's got tons of iron in it, and that's what people need. Lots of anemia out there and long distance runners, and it's got a lot of iron in it to get you through that marathon season. But the 2 times the 1 time I executed Boston amazing is actually started out with Matt. I talked a little bit about it in the last podcast. We talked about medals, but we started out, we had a group of people, we started out, we were jogging and having a conversation in the first 10K. We went out so slow, and we felt like we were jogging in the first 5K, and it's downhill, so that jog actually ends up being a little bit faster. But you literally have to feel like you're out jogging, because you do spend the morning waiting for the race. You're waiting 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever time you get to Hockington. And then I had the most energy at the Newton Hills, and I started out, I was in 350th place, I think, at the 10K marker, and I ended up 61st that year. And most of the people I passed were from mile 15 to 21. They were done. And guess what? The time I totally, completely bombed the race was the year that I was way overconfident. I went out in 540. I didn't even go out the year that I PR'd in the race. I went out 20 seconds faster and I was in worse shape. I got to mile 13 and my heart rate jacked up. I didn't even get to the Newton Hills yet. And guess what? I walked the Newton Hills pretty much. And people were looking at me and I had a Without Limits shirt on. They're like, come on, Without Limits, let's go. And I'm like, dude, how should I run backwards right now? Because I can't run forward. I was the most sore, the most just wrecked after that year. It was one of my worst Boston marathons. And all probably because my fitness was that far off. It's because what? Who can guess?
First 3 miles.
Started out too fast. It's amazing how the first 3 miles can completely annihilate your race. And guess what? For all the listeners out there, 75% of you will go out too fast. That's it, folks. Enjoy the Boston Marathon and good luck.